Good afternoon, I'm Roger Watterson, and this is Sunday Opinion. As the candidates in the September general election face the media on radio and TV and in the newspapers and respond to audiences at public meetings and trudge their way around the constituency door knocking, they come across a wide and sometimes unexpected range of topics and interests, many at an individual level. Some of the issues find their way into their personal manifestos. There's remarkably little so far has been focused on the older members of our society. With over 20% of the population in what could be loosely called the older generation, we're going to take our own close look in today's programme at some of the issues that are of concern to the over 65s, and with a backdrop of the warning over the potential increase in cost to government of a rise in the number of elderly residents in the island, and concerns over the future provision of both public sector pensions and the state pensions, we'll be discussing the role older people play within the community and just how they would like to see government and the broader society in the Isle of Man adjust to the changing demographics of the population and what they look forward to in the next 5 years. Our studio guests are the Chair of the University of Third Age, Ravina Talbot, Honorary Colonel Charles Wilson of the Royal British Legion, dementia support worker with the Alzheimer's Society in the Isle of Man, Susan Walker, and from the Isle of Man Lions Club, Mike Berry. Well, there we are. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for joining us this morning, and maybe we can have a look at a subject which, as I say, doesn't seem to be figured too much in the election campaign, so we're at home. So, but before we go any further, I introduce you, Ravina, as Chair of the University of the Third Age, U3A. Just tell us what that is.
Well, the University of the Third Age is a global organisation that was created about 30 years ago, and is known as the Third Age Trust. We have 320,000 members all over, and I was privileged in 2012 to start the Isle of Man U3A, and we have over 200 members now. So we're growing rapidly.
What do you do?
Basically, what we offer is an opportunity of like-minded people to meet and share, really, expertise and knowledge. So we have a number of small special interest groups. We have about 30 at the moment all over the island. So they range from walking groups, bridge groups, craft groups, art groups, discussion groups. And we're totally voluntary. The whole thing is run on membership fees. We have to give a percentage, of course, to our parent organisation, because that covers us with insurance and whatever. But out of that, really, we have monthly network meetings where people can come and listen to a key speaker about anything on the island that we choose to have.
And this
as
is all for people over a certain age?
This is for people in the third age, and that's difficult to quantify, because the Third Age Trust say the first age is childhood and school, the second age is family and work, and the third age is whatever you want it to be after that, because society is changing very rapidly. And what we're finding is people are actually retiring early, or they're actually living longer. And so really, we're almost into a fourth age now, I dread to say, but we're almost there. So actually, I think we're very open. If people want to know more about us, they just contact us.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go around all our guests today, so we don't actually know what they're all involved in. Susan, dementia support work. Now, the Alzheimer's Society is only part of the dementia picture, isn't it? But what actually do you do?
In the Alzheimer's Society, we take referrals from social workers or from older people's mental health service or even self-referrals of people who've been diagnosed with dementia. We go and visit them and we chat with them and we work out what their needs are in the way of support. So we offer certain activities such as singing for the brain, because singing is one of the last things to go in the brain. We offer something called Golden Memories. So in partnership with Manx National Heritage, we run a reminiscence group once a month, the first Wednesday of the month between 2 and 4. And people with dementia and their carers come together, and Katie from the museum does a presentation and then people look at artefacts from the museum. So this month, in fact last week, we did games, and we had a bagatelle, we had a shove halfpenny board, we had dolls, we had toys of various sorts that were games in the past, a hobby horse and things
all,
like that.
This all aids, in fact, somebody with this problem then?
It does. When somebody is diagnosed with dementia, normally their short-term memory is shot. They can't remember possibly what they did yesterday, what they had to eat last night, but their long-term memory is really good, and they can remember things right. way back in their lives.
Right. That's fine. So the organisation basically is set up to help people with this problem in one form or another.
Absolutely. Right. It's basically support, but we also look after the carers, because actually the carers suffer in a way far more than the person with dementia. Mm.
Now, the British Legion, Charles, we've all heard of it over the years, especially with the poppy appeals in the Isle of Man, and I suppose most of us associate the British Legion with support for people from the Second World War and around that period, but that seems to have changed a lot now, although the ages must have moved on. Isn't the people in the Falklands War now must be what we would call elderly?
Yes. Every National Service man or woman is 2 years older than I am. But interesting, Roger, that you should introduce me as the Honorary Colonel of right. the Cadets, because I'm not anymore.
Oh.
No, and it's an age-related matter, because as of the 16th of July, the Ministry of Defence threw me out.
Really?
Despite the fact that I'm willing to chomp through the Welsh mountains with my guys and girls and go whitewater rafting in Scotland, but I am too old.
Really?
So,
well, that's a good theme to introduce yourself.
I told my brigadier I was going to sue him. He didn't look very frightened, I have to say.
Okay, right.
But I'm sure there's something about my human rights and so on in there.
But you're back to the original rank of major.
I am indeed, yes, yes. Whether I can carry on with this colonel bit, I don't know, but I don't care, frankly.
Hope for us all, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, tell us then, if that's the case, back to the British Legion for a minute. And now, it had, of course, this large volume of people that it had to look after the Second World War. But as looking at the Legion's work and the beneficiaries of it, it seems to have changed enormously. But we're still predominantly elderly people, isn't it?
Yes, had to. I mean, obviously, I'm interested, not obviously, but I am interested in the other military charities as well. Mm. The Royal British Legion, some years ago, did some calculations to show that we possibly had about 3,000 ex-service people living on the streets of London alone. Mm. And of course, as people always say, you know, where does the poppy money go? Well, if we collect 140,000 quid, which we do, and thank you, Isle of Man, for that, and please keep it coming, clearly that's not all going to stay on the island. It does go off, and it does the greatest good for the greatest number. So when November comes up again, please put your hands in your pockets.
Yeah, but as far as its work, the actual work of it is concerned, and I mean, we'll come back to this in a minute, but and the beneficiaries of it, but it's specifically designed, I know it's specifically designed for service people, but am I right in saying it still does deal with people of a certain age and older?
It deals with anybody who has served. You only serve one day, right. And you are therefore entitled to benefit from the Royal British Legion.
Right. Okay. Now we move on to Mike Berry. Mike, you're Community Betterment Chair of the Lions Club in the Isle of Man. What does that do?
The Isle of Man Lions Club does a great deal for all sorts of people in all sorts of situations. I am the Community Betterment Chair in that all the requests come through me and then are discussed at club level. Mm-hmm. So it can be for anything in all sorts of situations. I've said before, Manx Children in Need, obviously, right through to our charity account in the age group which we've been talking about today. Mm. So we find that more and more applications or requests are coming in for this age group because they're struggling a little more. Mm. Manx Children in Need is an easier one to raise money for because it's in your face and you're there. But these are quiet people who need help, don't always ask for it because they haven't got the loudest voices, but they're there and they need our support.
And how do you give that help? Is it financial or is it physical?
It's financial. Also, we run an autumn club in St John's, for instance, which was founded by one of our former presidents. There, it's like an afternoon tea. It's a fortnight. We run the minibus. which gets the out-of-town people into St John's. We also do a Normandy Veterans Run, and we help in those sorts of ways.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe we can come back to that later then. Well, thank you, for all of you. Now, if I can go back to you, Ravina. You said that you're an organisation which I suppose you could argue that it's a sort of fun thing at a certain age. But I noticed that there's a political tone comes into some of your campaigning. I can remember not all that long ago you were campaigning on the basis of not old but gold campaign.
Yeah, I mean, that basically arose. We're actually not a political organisation and we don't endorse any political candidates. But what happened really was that actually was a reaction from people within our organisation that were quite appalled at the comments that were being made both by the media and by politicians about older people becoming a problem and a political time bomb. And so we decided, rather than actually to respond emotionally, to do some research and to actually find out some facts about older people on the Isle of Man. Therefore, we did our Not Old But Gold research, and three of us took it different aspects. We looked at the WRVS survey in the UK, and we looked at the Isle of Man Health and Lifestyle Survey, and we actually came up with some quite alarming things, really. One was that we discovered that there was very little data on older people on the Isle of Man in terms of planning for services. We also discovered, we estimated that older people are putting about 46 million into the Manx economy before they access health and social care. And then we also discovered that the dependency model that they were using was slightly out of date. There's a newer model now called the Real Dependency, which looks at people tend to actually access services about 15 years before they pass away. So there was a number of things that came out of that. As a result of that, we were invited by government to go and speak about data. We offered our services to help a questionnaire, and it fell on deaf ears. So basically, from that survey now, we decided to actually do a positive ageing course ourselves, which is going to happen this autumn, to actually encourage people to actually look at their own responsibility, personal responsibility, because ageing is a global issue and the Isle of Man is affected. We're not exempt from this. This is happening all over the world. And we're alarmed, really, that the government, while there's lots of good work going on, is very fragmented.
That's between all the different departments, are you saying? Well, this comes back to this unified government again, John.
Indeed, it does.
With the British Legion in their work, when you say that a lot of the money goes off the island, which I see why, but does any of it come back? Is there any British Legion direct work here in the island?
Yes, of course, there is. There's direct British Legion work, there's direct SAFA work, there's direct Army Benevolent Fund work, etc., etc. The Royal Naval Association, the Royal Air Force Association, they're all working at it. And, you know, what concerns me from the charitable point of view is that charities do what government should be doing. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the tax situation, we used to have on charitable giving a 20% relief. Mm. We now have a 10% relief. Now, that to me is almost, it didn't come by stealth, but a 10% relief. And you only get that 10% if you make a donation of £100 in one donation or more. Now, you know, government can't have it both ways. They can't take the money from us and then expect us, the charities, to provide the services that we do. And that worries me. A simple thing, I had a meeting last week, which was actually called by the Manx Labour Party. And we met with Minister Tier over the TV licence. Now, you look at the non-payment decision, they're not going to pay for TV licences for people over the age of 75 unless they are on income support. Now, income support is a very low line, and if you're £5 over the calculation, you're going to be £145.50 worse off. Now, that to me, and I said it in the paper and I said it in the meeting, that was a silly decision. That's drawing a financial line. What needs to be done is, as with all benefits, we need some form of means testing. Now, I know means testing is costly, but we do have a perfectly efficient tax department that can look at disposable income, and I know some people will get away with it because they may be living in a household where they are over the age, but there are other people living in that same household. But these sort of decisions, these bottom line decisions, these financial decisions, actually put this government's aims against each other. Had two aims, did it not? Balance the books and look after the vulnerable. Now, I was always taught in the army and in business, don't have two aims, because you can't succeed with two aims. Now, those two aims in this government's case have come up against each other. And my plea to all the candidates, if anybody's listening, my plea to all the candidates is sort it out, because those two aims are diametrically, in my view, opposed.
I, in various programmes we've had, have never yet got to a proper definition of what the vulnerable is.
No. Yeah. There isn't one.
Well, I mean, look at us sitting around here. We meet the vulnerable every day. To me, the vulnerable, if I can take a fictitious example, the vulnerable is the widow of a veteran who is alone, and we might go and visit her, but essentially she is alone, and she may be marginally housebound. Okay, she maybe can't get upstairs, so we provide a stairlift. So does the War Pensions Organisation, which is extremely good. I sit on the War Pensions Authority, and that is excellent because it gets work done, as do all our charities. My plea to the government is, the next government is sorting out. Look at what your priorities are. And it's already been made quite clear that a lot of us are getting older. Now, it flicks both ways, Rog. There are things that the old, and I'm statistically an old man now, not actually an old man, but statistically an old man, we've got responsibilities. The things that politicians can't say. If you smoke, stop, because you're becoming a liability on the National Health Service. And don't knock the National Health Service. I have a daughter who lives in California. Come with me on an underground journey and get out at Mission and 16th. That's the crossroads of two streets. And go upstairs, and there will be 16, maybe 20 people begging on the streets. That is the richest nation in the world, and they've got it wrong. Now, a lot of good people work in the National Health Service and put a lot of time and effort into it, and God bless them for doing it. So don't knock the National Health Service, but we may have to contribute more. It cuts both ways.
Now, your organisation with Alzheimer's, Susan, must actually have to work very closely with the National Health. Are you finding yourself actually having to pick up work and services that you would have normally expected them to do so?
Well, that's interesting you say that, because actually what we've done recently is actually appoint a dementia support worker who is actually going to be based in the hospital. In fact, that is me. I'm going from a community dementia support worker to actually work alongside people with dementia and their carers in the hospital. But if I can just also add to what Charles has just said, we see so many carers who are actually saving the government money because they are looking after their loved one with dementia. And they will do anything for that person, to the extent that one carer we worked with said that she didn't want help, as in physical help for her husband who has dementia. She wanted to look after his physical needs and health needs as much as she could. What she wanted was help with doing housework in her house so that she could actually focus on him. But what we find is that actually carers are spending so much time with their loved ones, they're making themselves ill. We've had an recently one carer has had a kidney problem, possibly because of the stress that it's causing her with her loved one having dementia. We've had somebody who has been diagnosed with cancer, and often the carers just do not focus on themselves, so that actually ends up with the health service having to look after them and contribute more to their health than possibly if at the start of the diagnosis there'd been a bit more consideration and support for the families.
Do you find then that when you apply or when you discuss, there are rigid lines and rules drawn that you can't move from one to the other?
Sorry, don't...
Well, what I'm trying to get at is you've just talked about one, a knock-on effect of something, which could be avoided maybe if something else was done. Are you finding that when you discuss that, the regulations or whatever they are, do not allow the movement of thought from one subject to another?
Yeah, there's always a lot of considerations, actually, so it's not easy. It's not a black and white consideration at all.
Charles was asking that whoever are successful in at this election, they sort out one or two issues. He defined them. What would you say?
I quite agree, and I think we meet a lot of people who we would classify as vulnerable. There are a number of people on the island who are diagnosed with dementia who live on their own, and I've been out with the mobile library, and it's amazing what a fantastic service that is, because they don't just stay on the library, they will go into people's homes and just check up how they are. And that might be the only person that vulnerable person has seen in a week. But it is just brilliant.
Well, of course, that was under threat at one time.
It was,
well,
yes.
Mike, you go out with these people. You were talking about taking people to various places. You've got a minibus which takes people out and goes around about with it. Now, obviously, whoever's doing the driving, and maybe I don't know if you do some of it, you must talk to these people from time to time.
Yeah, there are three or four of us who are main drivers. Yes, we do talk to people. But the majority of those people who are going out are the ones that want to go out, in that they're keen to interact and visit places and do things. There surely is a large number of people who are housebound for one reason or other who don't want to go out. They want to be visited rather than travel somewhere. So there are people, I mean, Southern Befrienders, for instance, is a wonderful job from that point of view. But if the neighbours don't know them, if they've got no family, who do they turn to? Mm-hmm. If they're getting a health visit, fine, if they're going to see their doctor. But some people would like to see people rather than leave their house to travel to somewhere.
You're highlighting actually an issue of loneliness.
Mm. Yes.
Might it in this instance, yeah. Mm. Well, when you go and see these, when you do take these people out and talk to them, I presume you must, during the course of the conversation, pick up some of the things that concern them. I mean, have you any idea what their major concerns are?
Making ends meet in some ways.
Yes.
Mm. In that if their pensions have suffered for one reason or another, and cost of living has gone up, prioritise within their own household as to what they can and can't afford. And possibly these people are slipping through the net. They're too proud possibly to ask.
Yes.
And yet they're struggling, they're trying to maintain a good life, but they need help.
They probably come from an age, a lot of these people, where social help, social services help is still seen as charity.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think that what has just been said is absolutely spot on. There are a lot of people who are maybe lonely actually on this island, and that is an indictment of our society. Knock on a door, go and see somebody, because you're quite right, Roger, that I do believe it's a generational thing, and I think maybe in 40, 50 years' time, because we've had such dependency, growing dependency on government, that situation may not exist. But there's a lot of pride in people, and we find this particularly in the military charities, that people don't want to ask for what they consider to be charity.
Well, I notice on the British Legion's website they're referring to one or two major issues of problems with them, and funny enough, loneliness is one of them. Lack of happiness is another one in this instance. Third one is adjusting to civilian life, which one can understand, but social isolation and difficulties with your existing relationships. So it does seem that sometimes the job affects the attitude in later life.
What, do you mean the job in the military?
Mm.
It does. Because it took me a long time to do what I call a transfer course from being in the military to being a civilian. And you take a serving soldier who's alone and he comes out. He's on his own, for the first time in his life, hasn't got mates around him. And I've said on previous programmes, you know, soldiers don't fight for great causes, they fight for the bloke standing next to them. And suddenly he loses all that, and he's on his own.
With the university, the Third Age, Ravina, when people join that then, are they joining because they want to learn something, or are they really joining for social contact?
Yeah, I mean, it's social contact, really. And to, I mean, our motto is learn, live and laugh.
Great.
So basically it's all about fun, and it's all about, you know, getting out and meeting new people, finding new friends. Interestingly, about the loneliness, and I agree totally, there are a lot of people on the island who are isolated. One of our members said, could we set up a Toto group? So I said, well, what is a Toto group? She said, those on their own. Mm. And one of the things that the government doesn't grasp is the fact that there are people on the island who've moved here who haven't got family here. So there isn't any carers in the community to look after them. And secondly, the other thing I think that was it's sort of misinformation. At the last budget, there was an announcement that they were valuing carers and they were increasing the allowance. A couple of my friends had a look at the data and discovered only 300 people benefited from that increase in carers allowance, because when you get to pension age, you can't get carers allowance. And so we've got, again, this mismatch of rhetoric, but actually, you know, the benefit system doesn't actually keep in line with the costs of providing services that older people are having to pay. So that's why really we're looking really for a more coordinated approach over government.
How do you think that'll come about? We've got a very, very complex social services and social security system,
yeah,
and a very complex health system for that matter.
Yeah, I think we have, and I think that's the problem. We're back to the silo mentality. And I think the problem with older people is whenever you mention it, we always default to care. So it goes to social services or health. Actually, what we're saying in the U3A is this is a global issue, and we actually need to have a bigger look at the issues. So for instance, we're asking government are asking people to work longer. They're raising the retirement age. So where is the debate on flexible working policies? Where is the debate on ageism in recruitment services? You know, there isn't that debate going on. And so housing, lots of things happening in housing. But is it the housing? Are we just replacing what we've already got? Because the housing we've got now will not meet the needs of people who are in their 80s and 90s and 100s.
That is with the object to keep people still at home.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's the object of the government.
And
so we feel we've suggested an older person, a commissioner for older people. There is one in Ireland, there is one in Wales. They work very successfully. Yes, they are paid by the government, but they have an overarching responsibility to take this debate wider than just health issues.
Yeah.
Our research showed that actually people on the Isle of Man are living longer, but they're more active and they're fitter and they're contributing to society. So really, we need this big debate really about, you know, do we have one policy for older people, 60s to 80s? Or do we have two policies? Because the needs of 80 to 100-year-olds is different from 60 to 80s.
Mm.
I don't see this debate taking place.
It's not taking place.
And I think the reason is, and there is no criticism of any of the charities that are working really hard, is they're busy focusing on services and delivery. What we need the government to do, and I spoke to a few politicians who are candidates hoping to get in, is that we're saying we need a coordinated strategy across government.
And what reaction did you get when you spoke to those candidates?
Four showed interest, and basically we had a good response from them, and they could see it. But I think there is a lot of people that are still looking at the economy, and they're not seeing this big issue that's coming down the line, really.
Which will affect the economy.
It will indeed.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the cost of nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know nursing homes are a business. They're in business to make money. However, you know, the social security maximum that can be contributed now to nursing care is £819.90 a week. The average top-up fee now is £105 a week. Now, that top-up fee has to be provided by family. or from the erosion of other assets that an older
like
person
selling
might
the family
have.
House.
I beg your pardon?
Like selling the family home.
Like selling the family home. And you, in the other man, we are only allowed to retain 13,000 quid. Now, Willie Neal, God bless him, who it's his birthday today. If you're listening, Willie, happy birthday. Does a great deal of work for the Royal Artillery Association. We've squeezed and squeezed this with the war pensions, particularly, to find out, is that 13,000 quid absolutely sacrosanct? And the answer is no, it's not. When you get down to 13,000 quid of assets, that can be taken as well. Now, that sort of thing needs carefully looking at. The nursing homes, you know, I appreciate that 24/7 care is going to be very costly. When we get to that stage, you know, people are being fed and looked after all the time. So it is going to cost a lot of money. And that needs carefully looking at. I mean, Joan Watterson raised that, what, about 3 years ago with regard to the cost of care homes. And that report to which you referred come out as a result. But that was 2007, I think. Mm-hmm. We need it again. So come on, you government candidates, or Timwell candidates, get in there and get it sorted out. And I did ask this week in this selfsame meeting of two Treasury officials how easy it was to transfer money now from one via money from one account, one silo, into another. And they both said, it's very easy. Well, if it's very easy, then it's only been made difficult by ministers who are hanging on to their budget in their particular silo. Mm. So let's have what we were talking about, joined up government.
Well,
the
environments have been well known even across departments for years. It's not a new thing.
No, it's not a new thing. I mean, it doesn't take the brains of an archbishop to work it out. How much did we spend on the SLOC?
$300,000.
I think it was bigger than that. Well, that could have helped with the TV licence straight away.
Well,
let's spend
up the budget before it was nicked.
Now, yes. That sort of thinking is so old-fashioned.
Mm. Now, I'm obliged to say, as you mentioned, one of the candidates for Russian in the conversation there, I have to tell everybody that also Leo Cousins, James Hampton, Mark Kemp,
yes,
and Lawrence Kelly are also candidates
for Russian. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I just add to what's just been said, because we do a lot of work with carers, and you know, one of their biggest fears is that when the person with dementia ends up in a care home because the loved one's unable to look after them anymore, their biggest fear is how much money will be taken from them.
Yeah.
And they need to exist as well as the other person being looked after.
So you're saying there's a lot of confusion at the moment and a lack of information or guidance?
Yeah, there is, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's where we're coming in, really, is we know a lot of work's going on behind the scenes, but what we're finding, we're being surprised by government. And what we want to know is we'd like to know what's coming, actually.
Yep.
You know, we don't want to actually be surprised by things. Right. So information is one thing. Infrastructure is the other thing. You know, the surgery in Peel is absolutely groaning, you know, with increased housing and whatever. And we need infrastructure to actually be able to support all this community-based policy.
This will come back to the talk about costs and cutting them as well.
Yes, it
will. It goes round in circles, doesn't it? But anyway, it's time for a short commercial break, so don't go away. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
With the 2016 general election just 11 days away, on Sunday Opinion this week, we're exploring the role of old people within the community and how the government and the broader society should or could adjust to the changing demographics of this population. Assisting us with this are Mike Berry, Susan Walker, Charles Wilson and Ravina Talbot. Now, can I just turn to you for this second part, Mike? I just say, we touched in earlier on about people working later, the pension age is being shifted back step by step. What do you think of the concept of people having to work maybe eventually till 70 years of age, 68, 69, 70? Do you think that's quite a good idea? Because they will continue to contribute to the general fund at that time.
Myself would foresee difficulty working beyond the age of 65 in the profession that I had of teaching, in that the work gets more difficult, the forms increase to be filled in, children are less amenable, put it nicely, than they used to be, in that
they have opinions,
which is fine. I'm delighted about that. They have opinions, they have knowledge, they have far more access to knowledge than we ever had. But I think you've got to be careful in that you're then building up illnesses within people and stress-related difficulties if they continue beyond the normal age of retirement. I can see we have to increase it beyond 65, but you're starting to talk about people then who are not running out of zip, but they've given an awful lot already and they're asked to give even more, and maybe their health would deteriorate and you wouldn't get the best service from them.
Of course, if you happen to be, as indeed I am, running your own business, sometimes the option to instantly retire is not there. I mean, I've got a firm belief. I don't know if this applies to dementia, Susan, but I am a firm believer that if you want to keep on being able to do it, you keep on doing it, otherwise you lose it. In other words, use it or lose it.
They do recommend that. In fact, one of the recommendations recently to put off the onset of dementia has been to learn a foreign language. Because you're stimulating your brain and really challenging yourself. So perhaps we all ought to do that.
Well, a lot of people are doing that with your individual. Are they learning a second language?
We've got Manx, a Manx group, but a lot of people are using Bridge as well as a good way of actually staving off. And Rummy Cubs is another group we've got.
Now, as far as the dementia side of it is concerned, is that something that is just static within our society, or is it growing proportionate to the growth in population?
Well, that's an interesting question. Statistically, we understand there are about 1,300 people across the island diagnosed with dementia. But as other people have said, often there are people who are in denial, who will not go to their GPs because they say to their loved ones, there's nothing wrong with me, and do not get a diagnosis. We do know that older people's mental health service are seeing about 30 people a month. Now, that isn't necessarily a diagnosis of dementia. It can be mild cognitive impairment, or it could be something else. But there are more than 1,300. And I think it's just that because we have a lot more knowledge, maybe there are more people than we thought there were.
And we have more population. We're up in the 80s now.
Absolutely.
According to the international figures, 88,000.
But as far as all of this, doing these things is concerned, Mike, what I'm trying to actually get at now is that we're in danger of producing a wish list here. If you were to say now to the, we've got candidates coming to the door, and I said at the start that having seen quite a lot of the manifestos, I've seen very little at all about the subject we're talking about today. Now, do you think it's because the subject is too complex, or because it's not a vote catcher? What do you think is the reason why it's been ignored?
I think it is a complex subject. I think I, for instance, am one person who is not au fait with all that is going on. And my concern is that however much the candidates might like to make a change, unless they start to explore once they're in post as to what's going on, and will they get support from their fellow members as the path and the route that they want to take. It's a learning curve for them, and also once they've sussed out the situation, as I said, will they get support from everybody else, or will it just be pushed to one side? You can go into the keys with all sorts of grandiose and wonderful ideas, you're going to change the world, but I think the harsher reality is that there are constraints, some of which is the unhelpfulness of other members.
Well, there undoubtedly are constraints. Most members don't realise that the job they've got until they get it. But nevertheless, let me just ask you very quickly one question. Somebody's knocking on your door, and this is the subject we're talking about. What would you say to them?
The person coming to the door. This is a
candidate.
Right. I would say to them, right, what are your views on how you're dealing with pensions? What are your views on how you're dealing with older people? Do you agree with the way the services have been reduced in that there are less opportunities for people to go on an official capacity to visit people? Are you supporting people in their homes? Because if this is your policy, what have you got in fact? Is there a network of regular visitors and callers on people whom you deemed to be vulnerable.
Okay, now I've literally got 4 minutes left to go now. We're running tight in time. But Charles Wilson, you're staying with us for The Man in Line.
I am indeed.
And I gather Sue Walker, you are so as well. So we can discuss a bit more before we go. But can I ask you the same question then, Ravina? Banging on your door, what are you going to say?
Well, we had this debate and we decided that we'd have 10 questions for our members, which went onto our website. And one of the questions, of course, was, would you support a commissioner for older people? Other questions were about health, local issues, and also very much about what they saw nationally as the economy, you know. So there was a broad range of questions, but the questions are there on our website, so you know there's still opportunity to go to our website, download them. We're not saying that our people can't generate their own questions, but it was just if some people lack confidence actually to talk to MHKs and candidates. And to be honest, a lot of them,
I think
they just feel intimidated by the whole process. A lot of candidates, you know, just throw a card through the door and don't want a conversation anyway.
True.
So that's happening an awful lot in this election. I think older people appreciate it when people spend at least 5 minutes with them, and they can actually find out a lot from the older person. So it helps their campaign as well.
Right. And what would you say, Susan?
Well, I would say, how do you see society looking after vulnerable people? Because I've done a presentation for MHKs and MLCs from earlier in the year, and it was really interesting that it was almost like a light bulb going on as I progressed through the presentation. And I think the looks I got seemed to say, oh my goodness, I didn't realise that was what was happening in our society.
A lot of the campaigns actually are based on bundles of clichés at the moment. I haven't right. What would you say, Charles?
Well, I won't mention any names again because you'll have to read out the list, but I've had three people through the door, and I've had 3 hours. I've taken each candidate and had an hour with each candidate. And what I said was I took the Age UK priorities, money, well-being, health, oblique care, and home. And then expanded that a little into benefits and how they're structured in the Isle of Man, the legal position. And one thing I could say to people talking about carers, try to talk to older people about getting powers of attorney. And I do think that, okay, it can be a little costly, and I think therefore there should be some government support for that, but that helps enormously. Pensions and tax.
Right, well, thank you. Now, we're just about at the end of our programme now, and we end this week's Sunday Opinion, which our studio guests were the Chair of the University of Third Age, Ravina Talbot, from the British Legion, Charles Wilson, Dementia Support Worker with the Alzheimer's Society, Susan Walker, and Mike Berry of the Isle of Man Lions Club. And we discussed just a little of the subject on the role of older people and the role they play in our society and what this growing number should be looking for in the current election campaign for the general election, which is on the 22nd of this month. If you'd like to add your voice to the discussion, then join us at 1:15 for the Man in Line, Manx Radio's Sunday phone-in programme. Telephone us on 66 13 68. You may also text to 166177 or email to studio@manxradio.com. Our producer today was Catherine Nicholl. I'm Roger Watterson, and we look forward to your company again at 1:15.